You have found the perfect place to move. The perfect place to raise your family. The perfect place to retire. The perfect place to live. Mountains that you can hike surround you. Forests with lots of hunting and trails blanket these mountains. There are beautiful lakes everywhere. Rivers, big and small, provide numerous opportunities for float trips and other water-related activities. A nearby snow ski resort offers countless hours of skiing and tubing and snowboarding. There are hours of snowmobiling just minutes away. Small towns sprinkle the countryside. Friendly people wave and talk and visit. The summers are mild, and the winters are usually not too bad. Public and private schools for your children are many, and you can choose from a wide variety. You have money in the bank to build your dream home. And you have moved hundreds or maybe thousands of miles just to build that dream home. But then, something you have always taken for granted stops you dead in your tracks. You quickly learn that without this one thing, you have nothing. And there's a possibility you don't have it. Today, we talk about that one thing that we all take for granted until we don't have it. But first, a word from our sponsor. You know, the past couple of episodes, I have talked about how much faster my internet service is here at our house since switching to EL Internet. Eric told me that so many of my issues with slow uploading of my podcast would disappear. And he also assured me that the pausing of our favorite streaming TV shows, which occasionally happened, would end. And he was right. Those frustrations and headaches are behind us thanks to his fast and reliable internet service. EL Internet Northwest started in 2010 to provide Boundary County with a better option for internet services, and boy, have they delivered. They have designed a state-of-the-art wireless network to connect homes and even the most remote areas with fast and reliable internet. What started out as a small network of four communication towers in central Boundary County has now grown to include a cable network, fiber optic network, and many more communication towers that support the vast majority of Boundary County and the northern part of Bonner County. And they're still expanding all of their networks into new areas. Another thing I like about them is that they are 100% local. The owners, office staff, technicians, and installers, they're our neighbors. Their office is located near the 3 Mile Junction just north of Bonner's Ferry. All customer service, billing, and tech support is done there. If you are having speed issues or connectivity issues with your internet service, I strongly urge you to consider giving Eric and his staff a call. Learn more about his service here in North Idaho. His number is 208-946-4147. I'm going to give you that number again so you have time to pick up a pencil and paper. Or you can check out his business on the internet at elinternetnorthwest.com. That's elinternetnw.com. And give Eric a little note that I sent you. I would really appreciate that. And now that you got that paper and pencil ready, his phone number is 208-946-4147. And again, tell him Ted sent you. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another podcast of Almost Paradise here in North Idaho. And we're about 30 miles from the Canadian border, and we're in a valley between a couple of mountain ranges to the east and the west, and the Kootenai River flows through, and it's just, it is beautiful up here. And I say this, my local town here is Bonner's Ferry, we're in Boundary County, and for some people, that you know this, and you've heard this a number of times, but I have new listeners all the time, so I'd like to bring in some specifics in case anybody wants to Google where I'm at. Today, I have a very interesting guest, and he forgot to tell me to remind me to start my little clock. And so I've started my little timer clock so I don't go too long in the podcast. So anyway, Steve Willis. Steve, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Steve is a, what are you, a water expert?
Yeah, kind of.
Steve does a number of things here locally concerning water, and Steve also does missionary trips to other countries, specifically Guatemala. I know that. Maybe there's some others. And so I met Steve a couple, 3 weeks ago, and I said, hey, you want to come on the podcast and talk about what you do? And so Steve has graciously agreed to take some time out of his busy life to come and visit with us. Steve, I always ask this at the start. I call my podcast Almost Paradise in North Idaho. How is it almost paradise for you?
It's a beautiful place for sure. And I can't imagine living anywhere else.
How long have you lived here?
We've been up here almost 6 years.
6 years. Oh, so you're a newbie. Yeah. We've been here for 12 or 13. So
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Paradise. We actually found this place on accident.
So. See, this is always interesting. How did you find this place?
Yeah. So I'll tell you.
Okay.
That's very, very interesting. So we were living in Guatemala. We were down there for a year doing water well projects.
Now, who's we?
My wife and kids and I.
Okay.
And I was going to come back home to the States. And I started lining up jobs for water surveying. This is what I do. I'll get into that in a minute. But I booked a job in Libby, Montana, and we were driving up from Texas. So we had some family down in Texas, so we flew into Texas and then drove home. And I had a bunch of different surveys lined up along the way. And yeah, we were heading up from Southern Idaho, heading back to the coast. But I had this job in Libby that I had to go. This on my way up from I-90. I was like, oh, this place is really nice. I've never really thought about Idaho before because it's a little sliver up here. But anyway, so I come up through here, through this area, and I'm like, man, this place is just, okay, let me back up for a second. So we come down into the little town, right, by the river at the
Bonner's Ferry.
Yeah, in Bonner's Ferry. I'm driving up, and I'm like, man, this valley's really pretty. And then on the way back home from Libby, coming down the hill, coming south.
Okay.
Is when I was like, this is it.
You were going down what we call North Hill.
Yeah.
Looking down at the river, and the town is just across. Yeah.
And I was like, man, this is it.
And it was time to move out of Guatemala.
Yeah. We were coming home, but we didn't want to stay in Washington, which we ended up staying for another year anyway, because my wife got pregnant.
Okay.
She had a specific midwife she wanted to use.
Okay.
But.
So you found a place a little north of here. Is that correct?
A little south.
Oh, a little south. Okay. Yeah. You're down by, that's right. What's the name of that?
It's Elmira.
Elmira. A little tiny hamlet.
Yeah.
And a white spot in the road.
When I first got here, we actually lived in Paradise Valley. At the Paradise Valley Inn. We rented that for a while. But yeah, so. Getting my wife over here, I actually booked a couple more jobs because the guy that I helped him, maybe he got water like 50 feet from this dry well. That's where I ended up finding water for him. So he told everybody in his community, he's a builder. I started getting just tons of work from him.
So things were looking good. You found a nice place to live.
Yeah.
And it's almost paradise. Yeah. Okay. How is it not almost paradise? Because I always want to throw in a fair, equal balance to this.
Absolutely. It's almost paradise because there's a few issues. The infrastructure out here, not super put together for as many people that has lived here. The water, there's community water systems, like 3 Mile.
And Cabinet Mountain. These are all water systems, rural water systems.
They are out of openings, so you can't get on them. They don't have enough water to feed more people, so there's literally waiting lists that are indefinite.
So if you want to come up here and build a new house,
yeah,
you need to check what real closely.
You need to make sure that A, you're buying a place that either had the subscription that's been paid for years ago, or you need to drill a well. But the drilling up here is very spotty. It's very hit and miss. If you're not down in the valley floor, there's a good chance that you might not get water if you drill it well, which is why I do what I do. So
now we are on what's called 3 mile water. We have access to what's called 3 mile water,
yeah,
rural water system. And 3 years after we moved here, we decided we wanted a well just because. And so we drilled and we got down 300 feet and we hadn't hit water yet. And we're going, oh. And then I checked with my neighbor across the road. He had a well. And I said, how far down did you go? And he said, 500 feet. I go, oh. So, okay, we're in now.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You don't want to stop and then they have nothing to show for it because this is not cheap.
No, because you have to pay for whether you have water or not.
Yes, and they're going to drill it. If you're going to pay by the foot,
yeah,
and you're going. So we did hit water about 500 feet, just like our neighbor across the road, and we're on now. But it was a little nerve-wracking drilling and not knowing for sure at first, and then we finally found it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But some people don't find it.
That's correct. Yeah, there's dry wells up here that are down 900,000 feet.
Yeah, so be sure to check that if you're going to...
There's a website online, and you can go on the Idaho Department of Water Resources. There's an interactive map. You can zoom into whatever, like literally zoom into your house, basically. And then you back out a little bit, and then all the wells will populate on the map as little black dots. You can click on the black dots. Maybe I'll send you a link later. You can throw it in here.
Oh, that'd be great. What was it again?
Idaho Department of Water Resources.
Okay. There you go, guys. Okay.
Interactive map. You can, if you click on the little dots, it'll tell you a short view of like depth and outcome.
Okay.
And there's another spot where you can click. Yes.
See, and that was where we were guilty. We didn't do a whole lot of research. Yeah. We just assumed. And it's actually just... Seriously, get water.
People think that they can just poke a hole in the ground and get water.
Yeah.
Oh, true.
Some people can.
Yeah.
But it's a crapshoot.
Like I said, if you're down in the floor, the very bottom of the valley where the river used to flow.
And we're up a little bit. We're under.
Yeah.
We're on what's called the North Bench.
Yeah.
And so we just assumed, and it was almost a very costly error. It was still costly, but it turned out to work out.
Sure.
So, but we were fortunate. So praise the Lord for that.
Amen.
We got people just to the west of us on the same, just keep going west a little bit, like a half mile or a quarter of a mile to keep on going. You were just giving that example. What happened there?
Yeah. So
no names.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So this client calls me and he's got his house 3/4 built.
And he hadn't checked.
He just assumed he could get on the water system.
And they couldn't get on the water system.
No. And they literally told him he couldn't even get on the list.
Because they have a limited amount of water, too.
They can only serve so many houses.
Yes.
And so they just didn't have, like I said, the infrastructure to put him on or even put him on the list. And so he's panicking, calling drillers. And the drillers are telling him, look, that area is notorious for either not getting water or being super deep. And so he freaks out. And actually, the guy that I helped him, Libby, used to go to church with this guy. And
word of mouth.
Yeah, so he heard about me. Calls me up, freaking out. And I come out and I did my minimum survey for him and went back, analyzed the data, and nothing. So I come back out again, half price, just trying to help the guy out. And again, nothing, another 8 spots that we checked. And then finally, I called him up and said, I'm just going to come out and start poking around and see what I can find.
Now, what does that specifically mean, poking around? What are you doing? Do you have, what do they call it, a wishing triangle thing, a witch, no. Water witch?
Witcher. Oh. You could call me a modern-day witcher.
Okay.
No, I don't use any
twigs
or copper rod. I do actually use copper rods, but I put them in the ground. That is an antenna. So we have
you're more scientific.
Yeah. So we have seismoelectric technology.
Okay.
So I'll give you a quick, easy rundown on how that works.
All right. Your 10 words or less.
So we put copper clad steel rods in the ground as our antenna and connect our computers up to it. Then we create a seismic event with either black powder or a big hammer.
That's what that was. And the stuff fell off of my shelf. That was the
size of a shotgun.
I'm just joking. Okay.
And so as that wave goes through the ground, if there is water, it releases the ions that are bound up between the earth and the water. Those ions come back to the surface as an electrical signal. So
I had no idea. This is very educational to me. Wow.
Yeah. And so based on time travel back from the source, we can get an estimated depth and how strong.
Oh, time travel. I'm a big Star Trek fan, and so there's a little bit of time travel. Okay. So it might take 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 5 seconds?
Almost right away, actually.
Yeah, okay.
That's fast.
Okay.
But, so the size of the signal gives us an estimated yield. A, do you have water? B, how much and how deep it might be?
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, I come back to this guy's house, and I just start taking shots everywhere. My wife, we're driving through the woods in my truck, and my wife's with me, and she says, let's check this spot right here.
She had a feeling.
She had a feeling.
So sometimes there's a hunch, there's a feeling, because you're so experienced.
Yeah.
Now there's a bush over here, and I know what that bush means. Yeah. Almost, but not quite.
Actually, the longer I do this, the more I realize we don't know until we check. Right? There's been water in places I thought there shouldn't be water, and there's been no water in places that I thought for sure would have water. And so just looking at something, we have no idea. Until we start checking. So anyway, we check this spot and lo and behold, there's water. So I'm like, this is your only spot.
And how far down did you have to go there?
I think it was less than 300, if I remember correctly.
And that's a bonus.
Yeah, extra bonus.
And he had no choice. He had to do it. Yeah.
And it was 20 gallons a minute. So.
Now, what do people do if they cannot get a well, but they've got a house now? They drop it in. Then they go down to the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
And there's a big water pump there, big whatever you want to call it.
Like a quarter for 50 gallons or something like that.
Yeah, you got to pay for the water. You fill up your tank that's in the back of your pickup truck, and then you haul it. And you might have to do that once a week or every 2 weeks or twice a week.
You want to have goats or whatever.
Yeah, if you got some livestock.
Garden.
Yeah.
Damn, a lot of water.
So we've been very fortunate here, but I know
there's a lot of people hauling water.
Yeah.
Because they bought property, a lot of them sight unseen coming up here thinking that it's going to be paradise.
So guys, check that out. Because what do you got if you don't have water?
What do you got?
Yeah.
You got nothing.
You got nothing. That's fact.
That's a fact.
Yeah. You can't. Yeah. You got to have water to drink. Just about.
Yeah.
Beyond everything else. You just take it for granted. You turn the faucet, water comes out.
Oh, you want a shower.
Take a shower, do your laundry, do your dishes, make cooking.
We're talking game over.
Game over if you don't have water. So guys, check that out before you dive in.
Well, yeah. I was saying it takes a long time to go down to the fairgrounds with your water tank. Fill it up, come on, pump it into wherever you got to pump it into. We're talking hours out of your week.
Now, I've heard stories that I did not experience this, and I'm just saying, sometimes you may not get all the information you need from your realtor.
Yeah,
I'm not just the general.
That's a very interesting point, because I actually have gone around to all of the realtors in the area. I don't want to bad mouth.
Oh, no. Because sometimes you just don't know.
But I'm going to tell you the truth because I believe the truth is.
It will set you free.
It will set you free. And so many realtors. All of the realtors I've heard know about. And the thing is that when there's a realtor trying to sell you a piece of property, they don't care if there's water. They want to make a sale.
They figure that's your job.
Yeah. And then also, I do a lot of this preliminary water finding because I have clients that have used me before for finding water and they're buying another property for an investment, whatever the case may be. They'll be like, Steve, can you come out? I've got 30 days to do my due diligence. I want to make sure there's water before I actually pull the trigger on this property. Sometimes there's no water and I can tell them that and they can go and take back their offer. It was contingent upon buying the water.
Read the fine print.
If we need about buying a property, you should totally make sure there's water before pulling trigger.
Absolutely.
But the realtors, they won't even talk about me because let's put it in perspective. If you were this is your livelihood. You're selling something. And if someone came through and told whoever you're selling it to, you, it's not really worth it because there's not X in this case. There's no water on that property. It's not going to sell. So that's a problem.
That's a problem.
And I understand that's your livelihood, but
yeah.
Very sketchy.
And that's as far as we're going to go with this conversation.
That's all.
Because our personal experience with our realtor was very good. Just with anything, you got to shop around, check references, know what you're doing, whether it's the realtor or the seller himself or the other zoning issues. There's just stuff. Everybody knows that. But sometimes you just assume things. And you know what assume means? You end up making
don't understand it. You can't just poke a hole and get water.
They just think, no issue. Yeah. Now, if I was buying a spot in the middle of the desert in Arizona, that might be more of an issue. But if you're in North Idaho, where everything's green, and you got a river nearby, and you got lakes everywhere, and you got beautiful forests, you go, what's the issue? You know, it is an issue.
It is an issue. And most people don't even know they should think.
Yeah.
They just think that everything will line up.
So that's our local part of this podcast about buyer beware.
It is a beautiful place.
Yes.
It's almost
paradise. It's almost
paradise.
But always focus on the word almost.
Be careful.
Yes. But you have another part of your life, which is involved with missionary work. In a big, broad sense, what's that all about and how'd you get involved in that?
Yeah.
And it's about water.
It is about water. It didn't start as water.
Okay. So, go ahead and tell me about that.
Yeah. So I think it was 2010, I had gotten injured at my place of employment.
And back in Washington.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I had to have a series of surgeries on shoulder and wrist. And I had a bunch of time off. And was at church and there was a missionary Sunday or something. People were talking. Missions sound cool. So there was another group that came through and they were like, we're hosting missionary boot camps in Ecuador.
Missionary boot camps in Ecuador.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that caught your attention.
Yeah. I was like, because they pitched it as getting your feet wet and seeing if it's something that might be your calling. Come down, experience a week of mission work. Rainforest and see if it's something God wants you to do. Because a lot of times people think that God's going to speak to you audibly or just be like, hey, Ted, you need to go do a mission.
This voice out of the sky.
Well, yeah. And oftentimes he doesn't.
He uses people to communicate to other people.
Yeah.
Sometimes he whispers.
Sometimes.
You got to pay attention.
Or sometimes he just taps you on the shoulder.
Yeah.
You turn around. There it is.
Yeah.
So my wife and I went down to Ecuador, the week and a half thing, whatever it was.
What was your big surprise when you got down there?
Being in third world country.
For the first time?
For the first time.
Yeah. What are some adjectives?
Specifically not in a big city, just in remote areas.
Okay.
Life is completely different.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you give me some visuals? How's it different?
So when you're driving through an area and you see what you think is a chicken hut and it's actually someone's house, it gives you some perspective on what we have.
Yeah. Yeah. Sanitation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
now where did you specifically stay? You and your wife?
So yeah, actually this boot camp was pretty rough. We actually slept in a tent.
Okay.
We packed and my wife hates this, but
she won't listen to this, right?
You probably will. But yes.
No names.
I bought this little pack tent, put it in our suitcase. It was a one person tent, really. But we packed in there. And
good job, Steve.
I'm telling you, it was hotter than sin down there.
Oh, there's another.
Yeah.
Okay.
And muggy and
mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes and
snakes. Bug.
So, yeah.
That's kidding.
Big snakes. Actually, one of the rivers we were bathing in, just as we got out of the river.
Bathing in the river.
Yeah. We had the
host was like, yes,
some kid just got tickled by a whatever
python or boa constrictor or something.
Some sort of big snake.
And I'd not been seen since. So,
yeah,
weird. Yeah, it was sketchy. But yeah, the other thing is, like, just you can just turn a tap on for water. So we're in the tent one night. You get ready to take our malaria pills because they talked us into that, which is not a super bad idea, but I'm also not into taking a bunch of stuff that's going to destroy my gut. That's a whole other story. Anyway, so we pop our pills and the pills get stuck on my throat because there's no water. I'm trying to dry swallow. Starts burning our esophaguses. And so, yeah, this water thing, right? Again, just turn on the tap. It was the middle of the night. We're out in the trees. And yeah, it was a rough experience. They ended up getting chiggers. Didn't know what those were until 2 weeks later, and they were hatching out of my leg. And
now, we got chiggers in Kansas. So I'm familiar with chiggers. I'm from Kansas originally.
Terrible little buggers.
Yeah, they're no fun. They get your socks.
So that was
where did you go there? What was the specific mission?
It was just an experience. A cultural experience.
Okay.
But we were helping.
Were you building a building or a house or doing?
Painting like a church.
Okay.
Putting on Sunday school thing, kids event.
Okay.
And very cool.
And you came away in the end going, I'd do this again?
Yes, but I knew I needed more theology training.
Yeah.
I just knew that we weren't ready.
Okay.
Closer to the next, like, 8 years, really studying hard.
Studying
hard. Trying to figure out what I knew or thought I knew.
Uh-huh.
And just making sure I had answers to the questions that inevitably would be asked.
Well, that's...
Yeah. So that was a long journey of just really nailing down what I believe.
Okay. And your wife was open to that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. You were both evenly yoked.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a huge deal. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, 2015 or 2016. So this water stuff I've been doing for on and off for since my oldest was like four. So he's 20. I was 22. So like 18 years.
Okay.
So I've been helping do the survey type stuff for aquifers, water surveys for 18 years now. And the people who were running the business that I sometimes helped do that, they were going to stop doing field work and just start focusing on other things. And so when they moved to Texas, I asked if I could buy some equipment and continue doing surveys and have my own business. That and this. So we bought equipment from them.
Now this is in Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to say I made a deal with God, but I did make a vow to God that if I bought this equipment, that I would help people.
You started to bring the two together.
Yeah.
Missionary work.
Yeah.
And water.
Yeah.
Somehow. Yes.
I didn't know how yet.
Yeah. So I did it. Yeah.
I had an idea. And then, so like within months of purchasing the equipment and running our business, because I was also doing some ecology drilling over in Washington. So that means just taking core samples at like gas stations in places that might be leaking fuel or whatever types of chemicals.
Whatever it takes to pay the bills. Yeah.
And to do that, to be licensed as a driller for that, any drilling license, you have to have continuing education credits. And so my buddy who owned the company that I was drilling for, he went to a class and heard a speaker speaking about opportunities to come down to Guatemala and drill water wells. And I thought, well, that's interesting. So we contacted the guy. We meant to go together, my buddy and I. He just couldn't make it work. So I ended up going down and bringing the equipment with, because they were really interested in the water survey aspect. And so the thing is, before we started going down, this specific organization was hitting like water only in every other. So they'd go into a village, 50-50 chance that they'd get water. And when you're talking about donor resources at the time, you know, because
you need to do better than that.
Yeah.
You need to hit better. Hopefully. Ideally. Yes.
Most water ever.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Because at the time, there was only U.S. drillers going down and drilling. And so it was only 3 months that they're down there drilling. And all of the well casing, everything is donation. So you really wanted stretch. You wanted stretch anyway. I'm not saying that our monies and our lives up here aren't worth it. But when you're talking about a remote village, you want it to work out.
Understood. Yes.
So I started going down. I went down in like in November for the first time, and I was sold. Like there, I couldn't.
Now November there is not winter, and we know it. So yeah, it's hot
all the time.
It's hot all the time there, and it rains a lot.
It does. But I couldn't see myself not going back. So I immediately came home, started planning another trip, went back for a month and a half, a month and 10 days or something like that, and did a bunch of work and lined up how you could live down there. I was just lined it up. Came back home 7 months later after putting together a team to help us raise funds to get monthly help. We ended up moving down there for the year before we came up here. Yeah.
And again, your wife is totally in on that. Your kids?
Yeah.
Yep. Kids too?
Kids were.
So the whole family moved down there?
Yeah, the kids. So they've always been homeschooled, and part of their curriculum was Christian stuff. And missionaries was part of that. And they were really thrilled.
This is like the ultimate field trip.
Yeah.
For the kid.
Yes.
So they were pretty. It is great.
Yeah.
They're exciting. Okay. So, well, not as rough or primitive as your first situation in the
pump. Yeah. It was still.
Yeah. You got a house though.
Yeah.
But it's probably. Yeah.
It was a house.
It was a house. Small, probably.
The walls didn't actually go all the way to the ceiling. So there was like a 1 foot gap between the wall and the ceiling.
Okay.
Every time it rained, the bugs would come inside and get
but
all over.
But you cared, but didn't.
Yeah.
It was, everybody's on board.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a sacrifice.
And it is
a sacrifice. Yeah.
There was at one point I was like ready to call it quits with everything.
Okay. Specifically?
Because we were just fighting. And if you don't have support.
It's stressful.
It's stressful. But we'd been together for 15 years.
Yeah. At that point, yeah. So. I think it's important that people realize, and when you're following Jesus in general, it doesn't suddenly become all easygoing or perfect. Mm-hmm. It's not paradise.
It's always work. Yeah.
There's always issues. There's always temptations. The more you're doing God's work, the more the devil attacks. The devil attacks. I believe that. So you take on this challenge/opportunity.
Right.
Okay. And you've got to dig in deep and lean hard on the scripture and what God and Jesus wants of you and is asking of you and calling for you. And it's so easy to turn away from that calling because it's so much nicer.
Goodness, yeah.
Somewhere else.
It's so hard sometimes following God.
Yeah.
And Jesus. It's not easy. It's riddled. The path is riddled with snakes.
Really, down there.
Yeah.
Is there a particular story where maybe your wife really screamed really loud or you did when you opened up something and there was something in the cupboard that you weren't expecting or whatever?
Well, at night when the lights go out, critters abound, right? So we're laying in bed, and this actually happened several times, and laying in bed and something ran across her face. It was a cockroach the first time and a spider the next time. But yeah, it's freaky.
Wow. Yeah.
You don't know what it is because it's dark. You think we're safe because you're sleeping on a net or whatever. Yeah.
I have a friend, an old high school friend named Mike, and he was in the oil business in the Middle East for many years, and they retired and they now live in Costa Rica, and they got a nice place
there.
And beautiful flowers, beautiful gardens, and all that kind of stuff. And he's invited us to come down and spend a couple of weeks. Like I said, we're old high school and college friends and so on. And we look at that, and primarily Joy, she goes, bugs. No, I want to go there because of the bugs.
Yeah, it's really not that.
It's not that bad. Okay. See, I got a t-shirt that says Kansas. It's not that bad. So
I think the benefits outweigh though.
Yes. We may make that trip someday.
I think you should.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. We'll have to talk to her later.
Yeah.
Global water issues in general and Guatemalan water issues in particular. What do you find down there? What's the real need?
Yeah, so there's not running water to them is a river.
Okay.
But the problem with that is that it's super contaminated.
Okay.
Everything.
Okay.
Because they bathe in it, their sewer dumps into it, wash their clothes in it.
It's not clean. Not
clean. It makes you sick.
And even if it looks clean.
Yeah. It's
not.
So their idea of pure water is clear water.
And that's not always the case.
Yeah. You got like zoobacteria. They're microscopic. You can't see them. You can look crystal clear, but you're going to get sick. Period. I've had giardia 5 times.
No, what's that?
I've had giardia. Five times.
What is that exactly?
Giardia is a little bug that gets in your belly and causes all sorts of
digestive issues,
yes.
Intestinal issues.
Yes.
Less pleasant.
See down.
Okay.
To the point where even if a drop of water hits your tongue, you're going to the bathroom.
It can be life-threatening.
It can be, yeah.
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 So don't drink the water.
Yeah, that's real.
Okay.
Even if you're in the shower and a drop of water hits your tongue or
oh, your mouth, really?
Yeah,
really?
You get sick really quick.
See, I would have not realized it was that intense or that sensitive.
Yeah.
Wow.
It can be.
Okay.
It doesn't matter how careful I've been down there. I get sick every time.
Now, so when you go down there, are you drilling for water or are you doing some other things as well?
We specifically just go around to the villages before they come through with the drill rig. To make sure there's water.
Okay.
Yeah, that's our job.
Okay.
But we also bring suitcases full of Bibles. And
okay.
Soccer balls with kids and bracelets. And
okay.
When we're in a village, it's not just work. We end up. The reason we started bringing stuff to hand out is because inevitably we're in a village. And because we're not down, everybody wants to see us.
Okay.
Why are these?
You are an oddity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Some of these people don't travel outside of their 5 mile radius.
Okay.
Because they're so deep out there that where are they going to go? And so they got to see what's going on. There's some white guys.
The word spreads.
Yeah. So what are they doing here? So it gives us a really good opportunity to let them know that God does care about them, but they're not forgotten.
Yeah. Right. So you develop relationships.
Yeah.
You had to develop the relationship in many ways before you can start to even share the word.
Correct. Yeah.
So that they have a level of trust. You know, what's their belief system based on in many ways down there? A lot of Catholic, isn't it? Right? But it's.
It is Catholic, supposedly, but they're. Yeah, well, it's a speculation about whether or not are or are not Mayan related. I think they are. They're very short people.
Okay.
Very robust people. I believe with their ancestors were the Mayans.
Okay.
And a lot of them where we work don't actually even speak Spanish. They speak.
Okay.
Which is a Mayan dialect.
Okay.
You look into it. And
there's some cultural and spiritual beliefs that come with that.
Yeah, I believe that some of their old ways so maybe they've changed some names, but they still worship the same
nature,
sons, yeah,
nature, and the sun, things like that. Is there some voodoo?
There is definitely some dark stuff going on.
Okay,
we experienced that firsthand.
Okay.
But yeah.
Now, what's that mean? What's that experience?
One of my close friends down there, he was dating this lady who supposedly was Christian, but she was practicing some sort of witchcraft.
Okay.
Some sort of magical stuff. and she was pretty dark about it. And but yeah, after she had come and visited us, we went through a pretty seriously hard time.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you as a family?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And like just having her around was like a...
There's a heaviness, like,
yeah.
A darkness.
Yeah.
Something's going on. Yeah.
Something was wrong with her.
Yeah.
And I believe that she was upset with us. I don't know why.
And I think it's almost like pure, I don't know what you call it, witchcraft or voodoo or whatever is one thing. But then when it becomes a little bit of a hybrid with Christianity, it becomes almost even more dangerous.
Yeah.
Because now you're really getting the attention of the other side. And like, we got to put an end to this. And so that progress you first think is progress can be a big drawback. Okay, now we got a battle. Now we got a battle going on. A spiritual battle.
Yeah.
I believe in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so now you go back how often?
We go back. We try to go back at least once a year.
Okay. And how long do you stay when you go?
We tend to 10 days to 2 weeks.
Okay.
I'd like to do more, but costs a lot of money.
Yeah. And what is it you specifically do now in your kind of routine around there?
So currently we go down and we fly in, we drive out 15 hours to where we work, and we locate water in a dozen villages or so that the drill crews can come through. We take some areas, you could just build a hole in them, so they do that. And then some areas they're really concerned about, so we try to hit those concerning areas for them before they come through and make sure there's water. So we try to hit as many villages as possible in a day. But
okay, so you find water.
We find the water.
It comes up, you establish a pump.
Yeah.
Is it a hand pump?
I mean, they don't even get water until after we're gone. But some, like Latin's last trip, they drilled the well the day after we located. Boom, water. And actually, the village had, they attempted to drill 2 times earlier. So they drilled the dry well. I finally came in, finally got there, and they were set up on the third hole, getting ready to drill. Took a shot, looking at if there was water there. There was not water. So we moved around about 5 different sites. I found some water. They drilled, and the next day they had water.
Okay. So, okay.
But yeah, so they put in a little hand pump.
And this hand pump is to serve the village.
Yes, the whole village.
And there might be how many people in a village?
Oh, anywhere from 100 people to 1,000.
And they don't have the infrastructure, I assume, for pipes and plumbing and all that. So they have a hand.
Yeah. So or an electric. Sometimes they can, if it's a big village, they can scrape enough money up to do like a solar pump into a big tank.
Okay. But still people have to come to it to get the water for the day.
Yeah. They still have to come to the water to get in. We still have to come in, walk to it. Or it's fine. They're used to walking to a water source. But it's cleaner.
Now, is that water safe?
Yeah, generally.
Safer,
yeah.
Okay.
Because it's from a deeper source and it's had time to filter through the...
Okay. So they still may need to treat it.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
Okay. But it's better than it was.
A lot better.
Okay. Yeah. And now is this well then sustained for a long period of time?
Yeah. And so they get trained on how to take care of the well.
Okay.
Which doesn't always work out.
Okay.
Maybe Joe and Bob were trained, but they maybe moved on or passed on or didn't pass on the ration. But the main organization we work with does a really good job at it.
And what's the name of your main organization?
Or the one we help the most down there is Water for Life International.
Water for Life International. Yeah. You guys can Google that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they actually have a really good staff now. Full-time Guatemalan employees, and some of those employees go around and maintenance the wells that are going out and test it and make sure everything's going well, which they didn't before, but amen they are now.
It's a process.
Yeah, and there's hundreds and hundreds of wells that they put in over the last 25, 30 years. And so going through these little places and fixing hand pumps and stuff, it's a lot of work, but...
Do they ever eventually develop the infrastructure for water lines to everybody's house?
A few villages Okay, yeah. So one or two villages that I know of, maybe one of the residents of the village has been to the States here, made a ton of money, moved back home, and was willing to set the little village up or their little area up with pipes to the houses.
Okay. Yeah. So now you have people who go with you on these mission trips.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Two trips ago, we started taking people with us.
Okay.
Just open people's eyes and give other people an opportunity to see.
And what kind of age group you got?
Oh, man. Anywhere from 18 to, yeah.
They have to be at least 18?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
If you wanted to bring your child with you, I would probably say like 12 would be, no one under 12.
Okay. But if somebody is like 16, 17, 18 and just wants to go and their parents say, yeah, you can go, but they don't go with them.
No, no.
No.
I'm not.
So what's the minimum? By themselves to go with you. 18. Yeah. Okay.
And because it's been generally safe, but I can't guarantee it.
There you go.
You know, I just can't be, I don't want to be.
It could be.
Anything could happen.
Sickness or animals. Is there any political strife down there that could be an issue?
Some, yeah.
Some? Okay. Because
it's the same everywhere. We got big government overreaching. And the little guy is out in the villages saying no. And so there's often uprisings.
Some rebels or some government coming back to reclaim control, maybe. There's just stuff. There's stuff. And so nobody under 18.
And there is. So in the 80s, I think it was, there was a big civil war.
In Guatemala.
In Guatemala. And it was the U.S.'s fault.
Okay.
And so not everybody likes
Americans. Yeah. They say, oh, look, there's white guys. And then they find out, oh, they're Americans. So the reaction can be.
I would say 99% love us because we have something to offer them.
But those that don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was going on is, companies like Dole, the fruit company.
Okay.
Like Banana Dole bananas.
Yeah.
Chiquita bananas.
Yeah.
Different fruit companies were buying a land from the government down there. But the government didn't own the land. It was family lands.
And they lost their land.
They lost their lands.
Wow. Okay.
Because the government wanted to sell it. So there was this huge civil war.
Okay. That was back in the 80s?
Yeah.
Okay. And there's still feelings.
There's some hard feelings with some older generations.
Family were affected and so on. So, okay. So I'm 18, 20, 25, whatever I am, 30 even, whatever. And they want to maybe get involved. Would they contact you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how would they contact you?
I have a phone number.
Okay. If you feel comfortable.
I have emails. I have an email, phone number.
What would be you feel comfortable giving them that?
Yeah. Okay. So my phone number is 360-890-1599.
Okay. Or an email address?
Yep. It's h2ho for Guatemala at gmail.com.
Okay. Now, do you have a booth down at the fair right now?
For my business.
For your business. So that's a little separate.
Yeah.
Related, but separate.
Yeah, we end up talking about.
But you can still talk. Well, by the time this gets out, the fair is going to be over.
Yeah.
So that's
I'll be at the standpoint during that week.
Oh.
I'll be at the Kootenai Fair the week after that.
So you're really out there pushing this, promoting it, and so on. So it's a great, good way to spread the word and get involved. Okay. What are some other things that if you don't want to go,
sure,
how else could they support and help?
So what we noted, the last trip I was on was an eye opener for me.
When was this?
This was in March.
Okay.
And I was took a group with, and a lot of our time spent in the car, just traveling to remote villages. Sometimes it's 4 hours to a village.
And what are the roads like? Terrible. Here you go.
A lot like the roads here.
Okay.
No, let's be real. I live
on the road.
There's some of these back roads are really terrible.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially over spring when the thaw's happening.
Yes.
I live on one of those roads.
Okay. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. You never know if you're going to actually make it home without walking. We're driving. I'm driving. I drive the van when we're down there. And we're passing through these little tiny communities, like 10, 12 huts, houses, whatever you want to call them. And I'm like, who's helping these guys? They're not on anyone's radar. Like many of these drilling organizations, they're either too small to ask for help, or they just don't know, or whatever the reason is, no one's even looking to help them. So one of my thoughts was, we should do some, at least filters for these folks, so they could filter the nasty water. And so when we got back to Antigua, where we normally unwind for a couple of days before we head back home to the States, one of those coffee shop and on the wall was hanging some buckets with some filters connected to them. And it's the same filter I take down to use personally, which is the Sawyer filter. And it's just like almost like a life straw. It's a little bit bigger. It's a little canister thing. It's not very big, but it was set up to filter a bucket into another bucket.
And you got safe water.
Yeah. And I was looking at the, because there was a whole presentation on the wall about it. And so I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I wonder if we could do that in these little villages, get each household a bucket filter. And so I contacted Sawyer, the filter company. Apparently they have an international side to their business, specifically designed for humanitarians and missionaries who want to help get safe water to people. So I had a Zoom call with their director of their international side. It was a very good call. And he said he would help us by getting us the really cheap discount.
Cool.
Humanitarian discount.
Okay.
On bucket systems. And the next trip we do, we'll probably be trying to take a few suitcases of filters, but they cost money. It's $20 per kit. But a kit can do a house. And if we train them properly on how to clean them, they could last 10 years.
A single one, filter.
Or longer. Yeah.
Wow. That's fantastic.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And part of the thing is, if we stop in a village or community and we actually spend the time to train them how to maintain it and clean it, which was the plan, mm-hmm. Just drop off a bucket with a filter and say adios.
Yeah.
We actually stay in that village, properly train them on how to take care of it. That filter could serve that family for many years.
Wow. And how is it powered?
No, it's just gravity.
It's just gravity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hang a bucket in your house.
And then it siphons
the line coming around into the filter, and it just
and the lower out. Bucket.
Yeah, trickle down.
Clean water.
Yep.
Wow. That's fantastic. So this was becoming a new emphasis, a new opportunity.
Yeah. And then we also have down days when we're down there. So like maybe, so Water for Life is a Seventh-day Adventist. I don't suppose it owned, but that's who runs it.
Okay. Okay.
And Seventh-day Adventists don't work on Saturday.
Okay.
Which is fine, but that's like a down day. We could be in a village.
Okay.
And also in a village training them.
Okay. So your next trip is hopefully when?
We're going to probably try to shoot for January now.
January, which isn't that far away.
No, not really.
Okay. And you've got some people, local, young people or whatever, who are signing up and wanting to do it?
We have some interest. Well, I can't take a bunch of people with us.
No, you probably have a limit. What would be the ideal number?
I would say 3 to 4 people
on a trip,
other than the wife, Ryan. Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
You take your whole family again?
I don't know. My oldest just got married in May.
Oh, things change, don't they?
His wife, it's funny, actually. His wife and him have been friends since they were like 3.
Oh, wow. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And they were best friends forever. And then she actually went on the first trip where I was taking people.
Okay.
And that's when they decided they couldn't live without each other.
Oh, my.
And so, Lawson.
No, Lawson.
Anyway, yeah. So, yeah. I think 3 or 4 people would probably be like, because I want to be able to focus on people. I don't want to just.
And, what's a trip like that cost?
Yeah, I would say probably around 2,000 to 2,500 a person.
A person.
Yeah, that's flight and just help with.
And the bulk of that needs to come from individuals donating money.
Yeah.
And helping out that way.
Yeah, that's
or all of it.
That's like a per person thing.
Yes.
So yeah. That's how much it generally costs per person to come down there.
Okay.
And not be semi-comfortable.
Is each person responsible for raising funds?
Absolutely.
Okay. And so between now and January or whenever, they start having a goal and they start doing things to raise money, and then they get the money together, and then you go on your trip.
Yeah. So just as a family, when we go, it's 7,500 to more. The other thing, we like to bless the people that are helping us down there. And so generally I help my friend who speaks English, because he lived in Georgia for 15 years. He's Guatemalan, but he came up for 15 years, lived up there. And then he went back home, not on his own choice. That's the way it works, right? He went home, and so he speaks fairly good English. He speaks great Spanish, obviously. And then he can also understand and speak some Quechua. So he's been a great translator and a great friend to us.
Okay.
And so he generally takes that time that we're in the area, takes it off of work, and helps us. And so I like to
help him out.
I like to leave him with
pay him something for his services and time.
A really nice blessing.
Yes.
Every time we go down there, I leave him a little bit of money, and he ends up doing something really crazy, you know, like buying a freezer so we can sell ice or whatever.
Oh, wow. Or there you go.
Or whatever. I left him our truck when we moved back here, and he used it as an ambulance to take people to the hospital. Well, really cool guy. And I like to just bless his soul.
Oh, yes, so.
Because he doesn't just waste the blessing, literally helps people.
Okay.
And then we have another friend in a different area down there. He's just retired, but he was a school teacher. And so we actually send his daughters to private school. Our family does. But we end up taking him like a full suitcase of Bibles.
Okay.
In Kekchi.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then you leave him some money, so that he has some money to distribute and drive around and stuff like that. He's known as like the missionary in his area.
Okay. So, Steve, you've got your business here and you've got your missionary work there. Sometimes they probably overlap a little bit.
They do.
Yeah. So if somebody is interested in your services here for water location and so on, or if they're interested in joining the mission team or getting more information about the mission team and the trip and so on, they got to raise the money for air flight and other stuff that comes up while they're gone. Again, that phone number to contact you would be
360-890-1599.
I think that's amazing. And you're usually gone for about two weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks. Be back. And it is the middle of winter. You get away from.
Even if you don't want to go or whatever, you can always donate to it.
Donate money, donate funds.
Help somebody didn't know, they can send a donation to you.
Sponsor somebody.
Sponsor someone to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's all sorts of options. Definitely pray for us.
That's good.
But I try to say it.
We assume.
I would assume that you would.
Prayer needs to be intentional.
It does.
And it used to be, we're so busy, sometimes it needs to be scheduled. To make sure we're supposed to pray all day long, seriously.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. On your daily prayer routine, schedule, and so on, include Steve and his mission.
Please.
For safety, for funding, for helping others, all of that. So thank you, Steve, so much for your time.
Yeah. And
I wish you nothing but the best. And keep me updated. Keep me updated, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. And guys, if you want to shoot me an email, it's almostparadise@northidaho.com. And we'll, if you have some ideas for future guests that you'd like to hear, give that to me. If you got some comments, some constructive criticism maybe, so I don't get my feelings hurt too bad, let me know. And I hope you guys get a hold of Steve if you have any questions at all. Okay? Thanks again, Steve. I've decided to offer some final thoughts. I'm going to call them reflections at the end of each of my podcasts, especially when it involves a guest. In regard to this specific podcast, how many of us truly embrace a mission? A mission that guides us and shapes us and gives us direction. Many of us search for that mission. We ask, why am I here? What am I doing? What is my purpose? How can I make a difference? Does God have a plan for me? We think about it off and on. But when we get a specific urging or nudge, do we listen? Do we respond? My guest Steve has such a mission, and it involves something so basic as water. He got an urging, and he answered. Water is one of the most essential gifts God has given us, both for the body and for the soul. Physically, we cannot survive without it. Our bodies are made mostly of water, and it sustains every cell, organ, and function. It refreshes us, cleanses us, and gives life to the earth itself. Without water, crops wither, animals die, and humanity cannot endure. When we drink deeply after thirst, we experience how vital it truly is, reminding us that life itself depends on this simple yet powerful element. But water is not only necessary in the physical sense, it holds deep spiritual meaning as well. Throughout Scripture, water is a symbol of life, cleansing, and renewal. In baptism, water represents the washing away of sin and the birth of new life in Christ. Jesus himself declared, "Whoever believes in me, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water." That was in John 7:38. Just as our bodies thirst, so do our souls. And it is only God's Spirit, the living water, that truly satisfies the deep thirst within us. Water humbles us. It reminds us that we are dependent, fragile, and in need of God's provision daily. Every drop we drink is a reminder of his faithfulness, and every stream or river whispers of his abundance. To be without water is to face death, but to receive the living water Christ offers is to find eternal life. Physically and spiritually, water is not just important, it is the very essence of life. Thanks for listening, everybody, and I'll see you again in a few days with another podcast.